All right. So you are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. For those of you who this is your first time tuning in, The Real World is UBC Film Society's radio segment where we talk about all things film related. So we don't only host this radio show, but we also put on various screenings throughout the school year and over the summer. So if you want to join us for one of those, our next one coming up is Nymphomaniac Volume 2 at 6 p.m. tomorrow in The Norm. And I'm Emma, for those of you who don't know. We have very special guest, friend of the show.
And it's such an honor every time. It's Matthew.
Yay!
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Matthew, is back. We're going to be talking everything Ghibli, not everything Ghibli, like three or four movies Ghibli today.
I'd say, and now I have a real question. Would you say it's pronounced Ghibli or Ghibli?
I've been saying Ghibli my whole life.
It's like a GIF versus JIF kind of question.
I feel like for me, it's like a pecan sort of thing where like whatever the other person says, I just default to that and like gaslight myself into believing I've said
it my whole
perfect.
Life. I'll say Ghibli, you can say Ghibli,
beautiful.
And then we can kind of cover all our bases
we'll
there.
Zero it out. No one
that's
can be
my
mad
thought.
At us.
Yeah.
I start saying like Ghibli or something
Ghibli.
Like that. Just whatever weird pronunciation I can throw in.
I love Ghibli, and I think that
Studio Ghibli.
Wow. Hey.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You know what? I think they should appoint me. Miyazaki finally retires.
Appoint you, and what would you appoint you as pronunciation expert?
Yeah. I don't make any movies. I just show up and say, actually, it's pronounced like this, and I say it different every time.
Oh, that's really good. No, I think that everyone needs an actually person on the payroll.
Exactly.
So that's good for you.
Pay me top dollar. But we'll be getting into studio, however it's pronounced, in a minute and 43 seconds after these ads and PSAs. So we'll be right back.
To life, teaching, leading, and inspiring. Help youth grow, connect, and thrive. Take our online quiz and find your perfect volunteer role. Adventure awaits. Join us at scouts.ca/volunteer.
Volunteering lets me turn fun, innovative ideas into fundraising successes. Each national fundraising event is an opportunity to work on my leadership and event planning skills, and seeing the impact on the scouts is so rewarding.
Take our online quiz and find your perfect volunteer role. Adventure awaits. Join us at scouts.ca/volunteer.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smokey every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
From 1951 to 1992, First Nation and Inuit children were placed in non-Indigenous communities to live in private homes to attend school. If you or someone you know participated in this program, compensation may be available. For details, please visit boardinghomesclassaction.com or call 1-888-499-1144 for details on eligibility, support, or opting out.
All right, so we are going to be starting it off strong. We decided to go chronological for this. So the earliest film that we watched was Porco Rosso.
Porco Rosso.
This was my first time seeing it for this episode, but you had seen it before.
Well, I love Porco Rosso, and I think that, well, okay, you know, for context, you know, to be fair, Italian family. And I do specifically say Italian family, because I will not be that person that is like, well, I'm half Italian on my dad's side, and never, you know, like, didn't grow up there, and I am Italian. No, I have Italian family, and so there's kind of a tangential kind of connection to it.
Like a vested interest.
Exactly. That. You know, I mean, it's such a, I think, the most unique movie on, or what, not maybe not the most unique, but I think for the, and we did look this up, it can be both Ghibli or Ghibli.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say Ghibli, you're going to say Ghibli. and it can be the most, I think it's the most different in terms of tone.
Yeah.
Compared to the rest of the films.
Like, I think the closest thing, like, of the like Ghibli films I've seen is The Wind Rises, which deals with like a similar kind of period, like similar like aviation sort of like theme, but this one was very like explicit. Like, he literally, Porco Rosso was like, oh, better a pig than a fascist. Like, it is very explicit.
It's very explicit. Yeah. And I think it's very interesting, the setting of, you know, Italy in a transitional period, yeah, between governments, you know, kind of the post-World War I era, because I think it's a fascinating area to look at, and especially because, like, the kind of the way that the presence of the presence of the like the transitional government, or, yeah, or the transition in government to kind of the fascist system is kind of portrayed from, like, the ground up on in the movie, where it's a present force in the film, but it's weird. It kind of creeps up on you throughout, yeah, the film. Like, you hear, like, there's little mentions of it. There's, like, the, oh, you know, the new government, like, they're saying you're unpatriotic, like you said, better a pig than a fascist. Yeah. But I do think it's interesting how it's very much like a, it almost serves the same force of nature role that nature itself might, yeah, serve in other Ghibli films.
Yeah, no, totally. It's like there's just these little, like, moments that you can see, like, the country is, like, kind of struggling. Like, it's like when they stop to, mm-hmm, refuel and they're like, oh, gas is so expensive here. Or when it's like, even they're building the ship and it's just like all the women building the ship because all the men have moved away to try and, like, find work. Or
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. The constant, like, and I mean, obviously, like you're saying with the, like, all the men moving away, it's the kind of, that kind of ties into the theming, you know, like you said, the main character being an explicitly a pig.
Yeah.
Drawing reference to it, you know, it's like the recurring bit almost, yeah, for the people around him just to be like, ah, such a pig.
Yeah.
You know, quit being such a pig, right? You know, like early on in the movie, there's the moment of, right, like you were saying, the men moving away for work, where he's at the workshop. Oh my gosh, is it Piccolo?
I think so, yeah.
I believe that's the workshop name, where, you know, they have only women working in the aviation workshop.
Yeah.
And there's simultaneously this kind of forefronting of the, you know, state of Italy post-World War I, with contrasting with kind of the explicit critique of Porco Rosso as a character and the kind of misogynist attitudes,
yeah,
that were prevalent in that time. And I think it's very interesting. I mean, I think it's fun that it just really explicitly says, quit being such a pig about it,
yeah,
right? Rather than maybe the more, like, I think, you know, if you're watching maybe something that's has less humor to it, it might, you know, more like be, like, more grounded about, like, the approach of, you know, how, like, attitudes at the time. But I appreciate, honestly, in that film that it's just, yeah, very clearly, like, hey, Porco Rosso, you suck.
Yeah.
Stop acting this way.
It's like, especially, like, compared to, like, other Ghibli movies, like, I feel like oftentimes, like, especially with, like, the female characters, like, Miyazaki is so, mm-hmm, careful to, like, kind of, like, almost place them, usually they're in a position of power above, like, the male characters, or they have,
yeah,
like, they're on the same level. Like, they're very, like, well-written. And, like, in this one, they are very well-written, but this is kind of one of the only films where you see that, like, negative treatment of them.
Yeah.
And, like, it's even, like, yeah, like you were saying, like, outright addressed, which I think kind of, like, serves, like, overall this film's, like, strength in its characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I also really enjoy how much of a departure this one is in terms of, like, mm-hmm, magical realism. Like, it's, like, the one point is, like, yeah, this guy's a pig, like, a literal pig. And, you, like, they, like, even the girl, like, asks him about it, and he's like, it's a long story, and we just have to go, okay.
It's so funny because I think the Ghibli movies generally,
yeah,
don't really address,
yeah,
their magic that much. Magic in Ghibli movies is usually, it's metaphorical in some sense.
Yeah.
I mean, as it is in this movie as well. It's all metaphorical, but It serves that kind of narrative purpose, and rarely is it, like, it's not like a Harry Potter ass kind of, you know,
yeah,
like, oh, I use the wand, or, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's got, like, something they feel the need to, like, explain. It's not like Star Wars Force where,
yeah,
it's like they're like, oh, we have to explain it now.
Yeah.
Here's how it works, and here's
them.
Right. I really appreciate, and I think it shines a lot in specifically Porco Rosso, because they just, like, acknowledge that,
yeah,
like everything else is normal. Well, quote unquote, there's, like, you know, plain pirates, and there's,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
all that. Right. There's all that, obviously. But, like, everything else is generally, this is just the real world.
Yeah.
Except this one guy is just a pig.
Yeah, and that's, like, it.
And it's just everyone kind of at, oh, you gotta figure out how to get rid of this curse. And it's like, I really like that it's, like, generally Ghibli movies love to just have magic,
yeah,
and just say, you have to suspend your disbelief because,
yeah,
this man's a pig. and he's not going to stop being a pig, and no one's going to explore. And like, it's, and they do kind of explore it, like, you know, obviously very like subtly, you know, they don't really, I don't think ever really explicitly talk about, you know, the curse or anything or what it actually
just,
really
like, alluded to as like a minor inconvenience of like, God, ran out of eggs, got to go to the store. And it's like, you're cursed to be a pig.
Yeah.
Something
it's,
incidental.
It's like it's tax season, man. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'm a pig now. I don't know, man.
Porco Rosso is actually a big metaphor for taxes.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of pigs, right? tax season. But I think that we were talking about the humor in the movie. And I think, honestly, that is why Porco Rosso is one of my favorite movies. Yeah. Honestly, just generally. I love Ghibli movies. But I think that, you know, we're going to talk about Boy and the Heron a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, some, like, Ghibli movies are, like, they're very beautiful and very soul-touching. And I think that they deal with very heavy themes in very beautiful ways. Sometimes I honestly just can't really handle that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do just want to, you know, watch a movie where the guy's a pig.
Yeah.
And, like, there are deeper themes in it, but I appreciate that, like, the humor in it.
Yeah.
I don't know what your expectations were going into the movie, because I think, like, the intro sequence alone sets such a tone of, like, of, like, the amount of bits they crack in the first, like, 5 minutes is so unlike a what you'd expect from a Ghibli movie. Yeah. Like a Nausicaa, like a Princess Mononoke. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even we're going to talk about Howl's in a bit. Like, Howl's is not particularly – there's jokes in it, but it's not – you know, there's, like, a comic relief character, and then it's, you know, kind of goes from there. But, like, this is, like – every character is being funny, or most characters in this movie are being funny.
They all got like their goofball moments. Like,
exactly.
There's no one character who is like carrying like the humor on their back. Like, they're all kind of being silly. Like,
yeah.
I think one of my favorite like bits of the movie was when like Donald was like showing up for the first time on the island, and it just panned up to him like on the cliff, like in between, like in the crevice.
Yeah,
and it was just so funny. And then like all the pirates like leaving at the crevice,
so
and they
funny.
Just don't explain like where they're going. They're just like,
it's like
in the crack
again. It's and you know, I think that says something, you know, but I so get what you mean, where it's like the like. The humor, like, I think that it's funny because the humor in Porco Rosso really follows the same almost logic of magic in Ghibli movies as a whole, where, like, they just kind of happen.
Yeah.
And you're never, like, again, the whole, like the whole, like, seaplane pirates brigade as a concept is so, like, you'd think it's treated the same way as the curse, where it's like, this is just a reality that there are bounty hunters and there are plane pirates. And it's like, and there was what, in again, I think the intro is just such like a condensed, like, you know, perfect example of it, where it's like, you know, there's the pirates like kidnapping the kids, and the, you know, they're like, we're like, like, we got to take all of them. It's not nice to separate them from their friends. Like, it's
so funny.
It's so funny. And like the interactions between them all. And then like Porco Rosso also just being like, they're like, they're going to stop on this island because they're cheap. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to, they don't want to save, they want to save fuels because they're cheapskates. And then like oh my gosh. And like everything down to like that whole intro sequence, even like the fan plane of like, oh, his fan club.
It's
like,
so funny.
It's all things that like, I think it's fun because like things that are typically reserved, like the kind of suspension of disbelief that's typically reserved for magic in a Ghibli movie is being applied to the comedy. And I think that's a really fun feature of this movie.
No, totally. Like, I think it's so fun, like how it also like manages to establish Porco Rosso as this more like anti-hero type character. Like, he's like, okay, like, give me back the kids and half the money, but you can keep the other half.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, he's still taking half the money. And like, I just, also the kids, like, as a whole character are so funny to me. Like, you bring them up, I forgot how like hysterical that opening scene is, where they're just like sitting like with the pilot being like, oh my god, can I shoot the gun? And it's like,
yeah,
we're
my
all
gosh.
On the swim team, so we're all gonna be fine.
Yeah, they're literally like, oh, no, swimming, it's dangerous, we're on the swim team. Like, absolutely diving in. Like, I love, no, and it's so funny that they just let themselves have fun with it. They let themselves have fun with it. And I think it's like, I honestly think that it helps get across the more serious underlying themes.
Yeah.
Because I think, obviously, there's clearly the very, like, there's a nice juxtaposition here. Mm-hmm. that I think is, again, I think that the humor in this movie substitutes in the place in the story where kind of more overt magic yeah. would be. Because, like, the humor serves as, like, a whimsical juxtaposition mm-hmm. with the more serious underlying themes. Yeah. Like, you know, I saw your Letterboxd review of the movie. Where you're talking about the character arc of the titular Porco Rosso and titular his actual name is Marco, but you know, yeah. it's I think it's an interesting juxtaposition, and it's interesting seeing how, like, you know, the tonal juxtaposition, mm-hmm. I think, is the main thing that fascinates me. Because when you look at, like, say, something like Howl's Moving Castle, the magic is very much woven into the story. Yeah. And, you know, while there is, like, the kind of magic serves as kind of a metaphor to, like, explore the deeper themes, they, you know, they don't, like, tonally, they kind of line up, right? Yeah. Like, they don't really, there's not as much of, like, a contrast there. Whereas, yeah, when you look at something like Porco Rosso, where mm-hmm. it's like the humor, which is the stand-in for the magic, you know, more prevalent in other stories, is very tonally yeah. different no, from totally. The underlying themes.
Like, even thinking, like, of kind of the other, like, plane-centric movie being, like, The Wind Rises. Like, that is not a funny movie.
No. Like, no, The Wind Rises is not a funny movie.
A devastating movie.
Oh, gosh, but,
like,
yeah.
This one, it still kind of has that same, like, I think Miyazaki has, like, this, like, reverence almost for, like, mm-hmm. the art of, like, plane building. Like, the way they're depicted is almost, like, wild animals or something. Like, you see them in, like, mm-hmm. plane, like, pilot heaven or whatever, where there's, like, this whole, like,
oh, my gosh, yeah, with, like, the planes yeah. all, oh, my gosh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
ocean
yeah.
of, like, a school of fish or something. Like, there's this way that they're depicted that's, like, contrasts, like, almost the beauty with, like, how they're often, like, so used as, like, weapons of war that yeah. is, like, truly, like, I think, like, that Miyazaki really wants to highlight how almost, like, unnatural that mm-hmm. seems, that, like, something that allows, like, humans to do this crazy thing, like, fly, is, like, being used to, like, kill mm-hmm. others. Like,
oh, my gosh, yeah. And, I mean, I think that that's, like, we're not talking about Nausicaä today, but, like, I think that it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think that that is such a prevalent theme, like, all throughout. And I think about Nausicaä. Nausicaä is one of my favorite movies. And that is a similar thing, right, where it kind of takes, you know, something that, like you said, that juxtaposition of, like, natural or this thing that could have wonder and how it's used for, and I think that sits on the backdrop of, like, obviously the wider themes of Ghibli's work and Miyazaki's work, where, you know, it tackles with, like, post-World War II Japan, right? Yeah. And obviously, I think Nausicaä's the most explicit example, mm-hmm. but, like, the kind of the nuclear reality
yeah.
of that kind of experience. And I think that, you know, Porco Rosso still plays with those same themes. It's just funny. And I think something that I think is interesting is that there's obviously this humor. And, you know, we keep laughing about, like, ah, oh, you're such a pig. You're like, ah, come on. Ah, Marco, what are you doing? Ah, come on. Like, you know, grow up. But it's, I do think it's interesting how this movie really, like, I think that, like, misogyny is, like, a general theme, I think, in a yeah. lot of, like, Miyazaki's work. And I think that in Porco Rosso, it's very spotlighted as kind of the central, mm-hmm. like, you know, the kind of idea of, like, you know, the like Porco Rosso, like Marco and the Curtis, the American.
Yeah.
And kind of the journey of, you know, this realization that, like, he is a womanizer.
Yeah.
By, you know, like that, you know, misogyny can take many forms.
No, totally.
And it does, and the exploration of that, and the exploration of, like, you know, kind of how those attitudes, you know, him being a pig, yeah. right? And how those attitudes and how, you know, it affects someone's entire person. Or you could also even look at it in the other direction of, like, you know, someone's experiences with, you know, the whole thing with, like, his backstory, right? With, like, yeah. the, you know, World War One. And I think, like, it's interesting how, like, that interplay between the themes of misogyny with, you know, him as a character being a literal pig and, like, you know, that kind of arc of, you see, like,
yeah,
you see that kind of womanizing attitude throughout the film. And I think it's interesting that it's just always explicitly called out. I don't think he ever gets away with it.
Yeah.
Like, everyone, like, in every scene, he's always getting called out for it.
Yeah, because I feel like it's, like, so typical. Like, you think, like, the roguish sort of, like, pilot. Like, it's, like, yeah. that's such, like, that's so woven into it of, like, oh, you know, yeah, they're going to have, like,
they're going to have a fan club. They're going to, yeah, stuff. Totally, and yeah.
It's very interesting how like on the hook, like Miyazaki keeps Porco Rosso for this, especially considering like it's like the 90s. I don't know.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's not exactly like a movie that came out in, you know, 2020 where it's way more, you know, not to say, I think that people give a lot of a passes to old movies because they'll look at an old film and be like, of the time. You know what I mean? But I think it's like you can always look and find old films that tackle themes like this in very, in ways that you might even see today or that might even be taboo today. And I think that, I think it's, you raise a really good point there where it's like they play the roguish bounty hunter archetype, like, and then like the movie really deconstructs like why, like, the real impact of a person like that. Because I think a lot of movies can really glorify that.
No, totally.
I mean, even think of like something like, you know, you'll look at even something like example, super popular example, Han Solo in Star Wars.
I was literally thinking, I was like, can I compare this to Han Solo?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Yes, you get it, right? Like the quintessential like roguish, like, you know, like quote unquote, like objectively hot. Like, you know, it's like, you have this archetype that I think gets played with in such an interesting way in this movie where it's like, you know, yeah, like you look at the very real implications of, hey, if you're treating women this way, like if you're sitting there and you have fan clubs and you're, you know, oh, I'm just so dangerous, like, sorry, I can't, you know, I feel like normally, oh my gosh, her name was Gina, I believe.
Yes.
The owner of the bar.
Yeah.
Gina, like their arc, is so fascinating because it's like it's something that would be so cookie cutter, I think, in so many other movies where you'd like they have the dame back at home that he's like, sorry, I gotta do one more job. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like and oftentimes that's like played off as like a and she's yearning for him, and then eventually once he settles down, he'll, you know, he'll come back to her. And I think it's very romanticized a lot of the time. Oh, and I really love how in this movie it's like we're really confronted with like, hey, you're actually being just as bad, if not worse, than, you know, the American guy that, like, Curtis, or who's like explicitly just like chasing and like, you know, proposing to like people, like, you know, he's explicitly just chasing, and we're kind of supposed to view him as the womanizer, and then we kind of get confronted with the fact that, well, no, actually what Porco Rosso's doing, what Marco's doing is the same, if not worse.
Yeah, no, I think it really plays with perspective in like an interesting way, and like even like construing power, like Gina is like such an interesting figure because she's very like a la like Humphrey Bogart and like Casablanca to
absolutely
me, like, owning this
absolutely
like sort of like cafe. And it's like it sort of plays her in a similar way of like she has that same level of power, like even though she is like, you know, the entertainer or whatever, she's not like being exploited by the owner of the club because she is like,
the owner. Yeah, it's so true. And I think it's such a fun reversal because it's like it's like it takes that trope and not necessarily reverses it to just like, you know, be shocking, right? Like I think oftentimes we can just take a trope and then just reverse it and be like, and now we've set a commentary on it because we did the opposite of what you expected. But I really like that it really deconstructs it, and it deconstructs also Gina's role in it and how it's like, well, look, there's this person that's like a very complex character, you know, is clearly like, again, it's immediate, right? With talking about like, you know, we just found like the third man die, you know, in found, he was, his remains are found, like, you know, and I just think it's a really wonderful, I think, like, I think it does something new with it, and I really appreciate that it explores Gina's character and gives her, like, and also explores the power she holds in the dynamic, rather than just kind of relegating her to, like, the, you know, like we said, like, the archetypal, like, bounty hunter, you know, damsel back at home, right? Yeah. Like, she does a lot in this movie, and she's a very active character in this movie, and it really spotlights how harmful, you know, his actions are to her, but not in a way that takes away her agency.
Yeah.
And I really like that.
Yeah. No, like, it definitely, like, it shows, like, the ripples of all of his actions in a way that feels very, like, grounded. Like, I think they don't have to artificially build the stakes because they've already spent so much time building these characters that it's, like, you know, whatever he does is going to, like, negatively impact them in some way. And it's, like, that just kind of, like, imbues the story with a sense of like tension, I think.
Yeah, oh my gosh. And I mean, that's not even to mention the, like, obviously his relationship with Fio, like the you know, the really, like, I'm glad they, like, they really critically examined that relationship. Like, you know, it's obviously like his friend who runs the company is constantly just telling him, like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. They very explicitly say, like, she's 17.
Yeah.
Like, she is 17. Clearly, you know, we don't know how old Marco is, obviously. Like, I think if you're probably counted out, he was, like, he was 17 when he was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
And then it's been, you know, however many. I'm sure you could count out the actual how old he is. But regardless, like, they keep mentioning it. They're like,
yeah,
don't do this. She's 17.
Yeah.
That's my niece.
Yeah.
Like, don't
please,
do it.
Marco.
Like, Marco. Like, I said, you know? And I do think it's interesting also, like, I don't know. I doesn't even mention that, like, that whole section of the movie where it's like he's very, you know, it's like, it's very much head-on confronting the misogyny of the main character, being like, hey, you know, the explicit, like, a woman's going to work on my plane.
Yeah.
I don't want to fly it. Then, you know, you know what I mean? Like, oh,
woman.
My God, you're telling me a group of women are going to build my plane?
Yeah.
Like, it's so fun that it doesn't really let him get away with that.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that, because I think a lot of movies have a character like that and they're too scared to say, yeah, this is our main character that's roguish and cool. Look at this. Look at how awfully they are treating people.
He kind of sucks.
Yeah. Let's acknowledge the fact that he's like, because I think movies will say that. They'll like be like, oh, look at misogynist.
Yeah.
But then they don't actually like follow. They don't go any deeper than just going, huh, and he's doing it again.
This guy sucks.
Yeah,
but it's like they act on it. But this movie actually
critiques
acts
him
on that, which I really appreciate.
Absolutely. I think it's fun. I love, and I mean, hey, I gotta say, you know what? Like, he kind of has a fade. Can we actually listen? circling out of the really real conversation here. Porco Rosso's got a fade.
Real.
Can we
real
acknowledge now his haircut? That he's...
That is crazy. He took off, like, his helmet. I was like, damn, okay.
I'm saying, like, you know, I'm saying this guy, like... Listen, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I get it.
I respect low taper fade game. Like,
he's
I
got a low taper for him. So he does have a low taper fade. And I don't think, and I think we all need to acknowledge that he has a low taper fade. But I think, unless you have any other thoughts on the movie,
no,
I think like
that, it's a beautiful way,
you know,
to end.
Smash or pass Porco Rosso?
Ooh, I gotta say pass.
You're gonna pass?
The low taper fade freaks me out.
No, I'm gonna be honest. Like, I think I could see it for other people. Like, okay, like if my friend was like, hey, he's kind of cute, I'd go like, okay, girl, like, yeah, like,
yeah.
I see that
can
for you.
I see it, but like, for me,
I just, he's not gonna catch me waiting for him to come back from bounty hunting.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
like,
I mean?
Sorry, like, Gina is right there.
No, Gina's right there. And I raised this question. And I think this is a throwback to when we talked about what we do in the shadows, and I said, and I swore on air before realizing I'm not really supposed to do that. But thruple with Porco Rosso and with thruple with Marco and Gina.
And Gina.
It
balances out for me because it's like, oh, I get Gina. Well, I just have to tolerate Marco.
sorry. I just realized as I asked that question, that's literally the vibe of like you're on. I don't know if you've ever had you're on a dating app, and every once in a while you'll come across someone that's like looking for a third, and it's like noticeably they do not post a picture of their partner, and it is just them, and then it's like it's always because he's like.
He's like, he's been cursed by a witch and he's a pig.
Yeah, he's a pig man. You know what I mean? Literally, I'm like, this is like, they're on Tinder. They're like swiping, looking for a third, and it's like, oh, like looking for a third for me and boyfriend. And it's like maybe like a half silhouette shot of him, and then you meet him. It's like, so like, okay, he was cursed, and he's a pig now.
Yeah. Hope it's still cool.
Hope that's cool. Yeah. We made gnocchi. You know, let's. I think so. Thruple, you said you're gonna just ignore Marco.
He's away like 90% of the time, anyways.
Well,
like,
yeah,
I'll just keep sending bounties his way.
Oh, that's really good. So yeah, you get in on it, and then you're like, he's out of town.
Yeah, God,
he's out of town. Oh man, love the way you sing.
Yeah. What if we thought about closing the relationship?
What if we thought about closing the relationship, but it's just us?
Oust Marco.
Okay, I think that's the perfect way to wrap up.
Oh yeah.
Porco Rosso.
Moving on to our next film, which again, similar sort of anti-war moment.
Yeah.
Howl's Moving Castle.
Well, that one's, ooh. Oh, wow. I think it's really funny. I have a fun story. pardon me. I have a fun story I have in my car. So I, for my birthday, like a couple of years ago, my friend got me this air freshener. And I've had it in my car for the past 2 years, right? It's just because it's like a light, it's like a little guy. I was like, oh, cool, a little guy.
A little buddy,
you know, a little friend. So it turns out it was Calcifer, Howl's Moving Castle. And I just had no idea because I'd never seen Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, my God.
So Calcifer's been sitting on, like, been hanging from my rearview mirror.
Damn.
For the past, like, genuinely, yeah, for the past 2 years, I got this car. And very, like, in the next, like, few months, my friend got me this air freshener. My entire time I've had this car for, like, 2 years, I've had Calcifer with saying, I'm baby, hanging from my rearview mirror. Never seen the movie. Found out literally yesterday when I was talking to someone about this. And she said, hey, like, she said, well, you have Calcifer in your car. And I said, what?
So it's like they set you up like prank style. You're gonna open the door and there's like a huge Calcifer.
No, genuinely, I was genuinely, like, I was shocked. And she was like, I thought you'd have, she was like, you've never seen Howls.
That's
you have
crazy.
Calcifer hanging. It didn't even cross my mind because you would love Calcifer.
Yeah.
So obviously you'd have that, but you don't even know who that is.
I was honestly so shocked when you said you hadn't seen Howl's Moving Castle because you give off the vibes of someone who has seen that movie like 4 or 5 times.
And I, you know, and I think that I watched it. You know, last night, and I very much immediately was like, okay, yeah, it's peak, and I get why everyone said, like,
real.
Matthew, you will love Howls.
Yeah.
Because I'd also only ever tried to watch it with friends who were so thirst watching it to the point where it was like, when Howl was no longer on screen, they were like, all right, we can turn it off.
Yeah. Skip.
Skip. Yeah, okay, we can turn it off. So that was the first time, like, actually sitting down and watching the whole thing rather than just, like, watching my friends rewind and
Howl
pause.
Howl Supercut.
Literally, they would rather watch a Howl Supercut. Oh, my gosh.
What were, like, initial thoughts, initial feelings with this film? Because it's, like, my favorite.
Well, first things first, really funny because I started out watching, and again, the person I was talking to you about this, she recommended, she was like, oh, I actually really like the dub of this one.
Christian Bale.
I'm going to be honest. And hey, you know what? You popped off about Christian Bale. I thought Christian Bale was so... Okay. There were scenes where I felt like he was into it.
Yeah.
And then there were scenes where I was like, this is Patrick Bateman talking to me right now.
Real.
He's doing the Patrick Bateman voice.
See, I think the reason I could get through it is because I haven't seen American Psycho. Except in clips. And when I first watched it was like 2020. So I hadn't like heard anyone else talk other than like my teachers over Zoom for like the past 2 months. So I was I can fuck with this, but like, you know, I get it. I could see, like, I think if I rewatched it now, I think I would be getting like a little bit Patrick Bateman.
Literally, I'm like, oh my God, it's like I'm getting like, let's see the Witch of the Waste card. Like, I'm getting that the whole time I'm watching.
Allen's card.
Let's see Paul Allen's magic. the whole time, I switched to sub.
Beautiful.
Okay, but I did love, everyone was right. I loved Calcifer.
Huge.
Calcifer's my guy, and I love that he's a New Yorker.
That's so
funny.
In
the dub.
Yeah.
I actually, because the whole thing was, I actually did fully watch, I watched the full dub because I switched it off, and then I was like, no, but I want my New York baddie Calcifer. Like, I want my New York, like, I want my New York, I can, like, picture him wearing, like baggy, like, jeans and a tank top and, like, a chain.
He's gonna take you to a local pizza shop and be like, you won't get a slice like this anywhere else.
Calcifer brings me to his local bodega and calls the guy boss.
Yeah.
Like, that, Calcifer is, like, no, and you know, and he's just as sensitive, and he's just as baby on the inside as a New Yorker guy giving me a hoagie. But I thought like the movie was, I thought it was so, I mean, I was knowing nothing about it too, like literally having only seen that intro clip, I didn't even know she got old.
Yeah.
Gonna be honest with you.
Damn.
That was a shock to me that she was old in the movie. I really thought it was fun exploring beauty first of all, generally. And I really loved the kind of interplay between age and, you know, the love story between them and kind of the, you know, that like forefront of the idea of youthful beauty and, you know, the placing such importance on it.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fascinating, I don't even know if I'd necessarily, I'd say the war thing, low-key, was like a B-plot.
The war was a B-plot,
which
is kind of
weird.
Crazy.
Weird.
I feel like that's like such a Miyazaki thing. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, here's this like beautiful story. Also the war.
Also the war. well, it's funny because I'm almost like he couldn't help himself but make war happen. He was like, Miyazaki day one, no film about war. Oh, do it again. Oh my God.
The beauty is a metaphor for fuck war.
It's war. And I think that like I loved the, you know, the story at the core of it, which was kind of this like, you know, this critique of aging and beauty and how that plays with romantic connection. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I thought that, I thought that was really, really interesting. And I really liked the kind of, I thought it was interesting because I didn't expect this, was that part of, it was an interesting, I think, commentary that Sophie being old also kind of, it was interesting how like, it wasn't just like, it was, well, it's Sophie and now she's learning how to be old or something, right? It's like, obviously there were moments of that, of her being like, curse these old bones, right? Like, oh, my back, right?
Yeah,
like
the Stairmaster for the Howl's movie.
Yeah,
console.
Literally, yeah. Like, I'm like, can we get an escalator in here? Like, you know, but like, I think like, you're like climbing up the mountain and stuff, like kind of like learning like the limitations and, you know, obviously like the immediate, like when she leaves her, like, you know, the store out the back and it's like, oh, my back, like, you know, immediately, they do play with that, but I really thought it was interesting how they played more with the idea of like mental age and like how it was almost a commentary on how the societal kind of like view of you as an older person informs somewhat your perspective on things. And I thought it was interesting because it was like, you know, things like like she'd talk about, like, I just remember distinctly the scene of like her sitting and looking at the water and just being like, in your old age, you just love to look at the scenery. And I was like, that's so interesting because in theory, Sophie's absolutely still a like 20-year-old, you know, like, woman.
She just so quickly accepts. She's like, okay, I'm like 90 now. It's time to start doing 90-year-old activities.
Yeah, genuinely. It's like it's time to hit the 90-year-old grind. Like, you know, like it's so interesting how that like flips so quickly in the movie. And it becomes more of an exploration of like, well, like this person is like her mentally hasn't changed, right? It's like she's still mentally the same. But it's an interesting commentary on like how like, you know, just the realities of like aging or like, you know, the way that society views you and treats you will like, you know, kind of informs how she goes about like things.
And I think like even with like war as that like sort of like shadow over all of it, like it's kind of like this idea of like how like lucky you can be to like preserve like this sense of youth like while there's something so horrific going on, which I think is why like Howell like breaking down over his hair and stuff is like kind of played as like such like he's having like a diva moment. Like
when that happened, I was like, girl, you and me both.
Yeah,
girl, you and me both. If I went and took a bath and suddenly I was a redhead, I'd be freaking out too.
I'd turn to goo as well, you know?
I'd goop up myself. And I will say, you know, and I do love, and you know, I loved the Witch of the Waste goo servants.
Real.
I will be so for real with you. Love a movie so that's got goop guys. In it.
Literally, this is like such a goopy guys. Movie.
It's a goopy movie.
Like, and I respect it for that. Like, it is seriously like the goop levels unparalleled.
Peak goop levels in Howl's Moving Castle. And I don't actually like that sentence very much. But I, considering I was just talking about how about people thirst watching it, I was like, never mind. Hold on, peak goop levels in Howl's Moving Castle is maybe not the best way to phrase it. But I get, you know. Yeah, I think it is very, I think it's fascinating. Like, you know, it's, I was like such a, I didn't expect Howl to be such a diva.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think that, you know, my, you know, I think about the time I like thirst watch, we literally just thirst watched the first scene where he saves her and he's suave and he's like super hot and he's like, and he's like, good girl and all that. And I'm like, and you know, I remember watching that and it's so funny because that was the only thing I'd seen in the movie. And then going from that to like the actual train wreck of a character that Howl is, like absolute diva. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. The things that he's like, I only want to be young and beautiful all the time. And I dated that witch, but I realized she wasn't beautiful.
Yeah. Like, how self-absorbed he is. And he's just, like, literally, like, sitting there in his stupid little castle, like, dodging the wizard draft, basically.
Yeah, but,
like,
literally, he's dodging the draft. He's draft dodging, which, you know, hey, you know what? Shout out to draft dodgers. You know what? Hey, I'll say it. I don't know if... legally, can I say that? I don't know. Yeah. But, like... Yeah, I think, like, that scene where he comes down and is like, I won't live if I can't be beautiful was so, oh, I don't know, that was so interesting. And I'll be honest, honestly, watching this as, you know, hey, I'm turning 24 this year. Not old, obviously. I'm youthful, my youthful glow. Yeah. But, you know.
It's got a spring in your step and all that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, I could maybe do, like, a little like, click my heels and be like, yay! You know, jaunt. I can jaunt. Hey, I can still jaunt and meander and frolic. Yeah. You know, my knees haven't given out yet. But I have been very aware.
Yeah.
As I, you know, come out of university, as I, you know, am, you know, hitting my mid-20s, I'm like, oh, you know, I am aware of, like, the reality of, you know, the hyper-focus of, like, youthful beauty. And it's, like, it started to, like, not hit me, but it's, like, I've become aware of it now. And it was kind of this, like, far-off idea before. So watching this movie and kind of, like, being, it's funny, it was, like, a really good time for me to watch this movie because I'd just been kind of thinking about, like, you know, youth and, you know, the beauty and all that. And I just kind of thinking about that and watching the movie, like, really kind of deconstructs that.
Yeah.
And it's funny watching Howell be a diva and have a meltdown about his hair. Cause me, you know, for the listeners at home, I have long hair like Howell, vaguely a similar length. And I'm also obsessed with it and obsessively take care of it. And I'm, like, trying to, you know, try products and, like, do, you know, make it look nice. And I told people that my second greatest fear is going bald. sorry to all the, you know, balding baddies out there, but I would explode. And
mad respect for you guys, but that would kill me.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really funny watching Howell, like, diva meltdown about his hair and kind of be faced with a reflection of, like, oh, yeah, that is kind of stupid and silly, isn't it?
It kind of feels like when you, like, wake up the morning after, like, a really emotional day and, like, you check, like, you open your phone, it's on, like, the notes app. Like, then you
So
I was being dramatic.
Yeah, totally. And it's, like, the perspective of it. It's, like, being forced to have perspective. And that was not something I was expecting from Howl's Moving Castle to look at, like, deadbeat pretty boy who, like, runs away from all his problems, and I was like, oh no,
getting a little too real in the moving castle.
No. So I that was kind of my perspective on it. I thought it was an interesting. That food looks so good in Ghibli movies, man.
This movie got me onto fried eggs. Like, I remember before, really? I only ever ate scrambled eggs. I watched this movie and I was like, yeah, I need to try that.
Damn, yeah, you saw them cooking that up on Calcifer and you were like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like, I saw that, like, strip of bacon that was, like, the size of her forearm, slapped that down on, like, the pan, and I watched this movie while eating eggs and bacon, actually, and it was kind of felt like I was there.
Yeah,
I kind of felt
immersive screenings.
Yeah, it's like those. It's like, you know, 4D movies, like scratch and sniff movies, exactly. Except like I think 5D movies. Right, huge. The next step is like if they're eating food, I want them to serve me the food that they're eating in the movie. And that would be, I would pay to be like eating Ghibli food movie or Ghibli movie food while a Ghibli food movie, while watching Ghibli food movie.
I know there's like this one restaurant like down Kitsilano, like Dawn or something.
And
on their menu is like the Howl's Moving Castle breakfast or something. And I've, so many times I've come close and I'm like, I just don't want to be like, I don't want to come out and just be like, this isn't.
I can't have it ruined for me. Yeah. I can't have it ruined for me.
I'm going to send it back until like they give me the exact cartoon.
Oh, exactly. Because you know that also if it looks exactly like the animation, it's going to not taste that good. Yeah. If they try really hard to make it look exactly the same, it's not going to taste as good. And if they make it taste really good, it's not going to look exactly the same. So, like, I can't have the reality broken for me that that eggs and bacon was the best damn shit I've ever, I'd ever eaten in my life.
No, because she was, like, cooking that up. Like, it is crazy.
That's what I'm saying. And I, you know, I kind of need a little, I think that, okay, you know, I think that if I were to look at any Ghibli movie like, you know, Companion,
yeah,
I want a sassy New Yorker fire in my home. I'll say it.
Like, he's low-key, like, the ideal companion.
Low-key my guy.
Like, funny guy. Like, you, the amount of bits,
uh-huh,
you have, like, a whole, like, rapport going.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I'm saying, like, I crack a beer with him. I crack a log for him. And, you know, where I, like, what's... do you think... such a dumb question. Do you think Calcifer could smoke weed and get high?
I was literally just about to ask. I was like, it was like drifting through my mind. I was like,
do you think, Calcifer could, like, do you think I could, like, do you think, and I don't even think it need to be a joint.
No.
I think he could just, like, sprinkle.
Yeah, like oregano style.
Yeah, exactly. I could probably sprinkle it on him. And can I hotbox my room with Calcifer?
Now we're asking the real question.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Is
dream blunt rotation. Calcifer is like number one.
Oh my gosh. Okay. At the end of, when we wrap up in like 15 minutes, we do need to do dream blunt rotation of Ghibli characters.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know if you have any more thoughts on Howls. Like, you know, you've already obviously seen it.
Oh yeah. No, I love this movie. It is like beautiful. I think the one last thing I will say is like my favorite scene. It's like so unremarkable. Like when Howl's just like in his bed and like you get to see all the detail that went into like making his room and like
how
much time
gosh,
it would take
yeah.
him to draw all those little like trinkets. God. Yeah, yeah. It just really like hammers home like how much love went into this.
Yeah.
For me, like whenever I see that scene, I'm like, damn, like I get halfway into that and like quit, but they need to do like frames and frames and frames of this.
I know. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I think it goes without saying. I feel like I haven't mentioned it just because it's so like obvious.
Yeah.
Like it's like goes without saying, but like Ghibli movies are like absolute artistry.
Oh,
like
yeah.
They are absolutely beautiful. Stunning. Like again, the whole thing of like any frame could be a wallpaper, right?
Yeah.
That whole idea of like, and like Howl's room too is like, oh my gosh. The amount of detail that went into that background work on that is insane. And even like the castle, actually, the castle itself is so moves so fascinatingly.
Oh my God.
And it's so like all the parts, like it feels, you know, all at the same time, like chaotic and you know, nonsensical, mm-hmm. but also that like everything was designed with a purpose, like every part of that like plate on the outside of the castle, quote unquote castle, has a purpose.
Yeah,
and
like
intentional
mess.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Intentional mess. Perfect way of describing it. Perfect way of describing, I think, the artistic direction of Howl's Moving Castle is just that like a lot of, you know, the way and the juxtaposition of like the intentional mess of Howl's space and when they go to the palace, right? And we go to they interact with, you know, the head sorceress, the, you know, it's very interesting. I think it's
like
a really interesting stylistically.
So sterile. It's like off-putting because you've spent so much time in this like messy room.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Then it's like, I think even like comparing with like our next film, like I think Ponyo is a bit more like stripped back in terms of its visuals. Like it's not as big on, like there are moments of like this big, like grandiose sort of like, whoa, but it's very much like grounded and it's like everything is neat and it isn't like it doesn't come off as sterile, it comes off as kind of like warm,
joyful, whimsical, you know. It's I love that the different ways that they play with space in these movies and empty and negative space and, you know, the absence of things and it, like you said, it's like they play with it in Howls as like a very intimidating, you know, even and they're like Porco Rosso, right?
Yeah.
Like they play with that negative space is like open, free, you know, the negative space in Howl's is more like intimidating, sterile. Ponyo, it's more like this kind of, you know, relaxing, carefree, like.
And I think that like also reflects the idea of like in Ponyo, like the protagonist is like a kid. So it's like kind of this idea of like looking towards the future and just seeing so much like possibility.
Absolutely.
In a way.
Well, and yeah, to, you know, bring this, you know, to flip this on you moving forward, just to briefly touch on Ponyo, actually.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you had never seen Ponyo?
No. This
was,
I've seen it in like bits and pieces because like growing up, there was this one like piano place I went to and they were always, they had Ponyo on
Ponyo
loop.
Ponyo on lock.
I had seen like, I'd seen Ponyo eat a piece of ham about 15 times, but never past that.
And that's, I think, the most quintessential part of the movie when Ponyo absolutely tears up that piece of ham.
That is a luscious piece of ham.
My hungry after a night out would eat the Ponyo ham. So yeah, like oh my gosh. I think that, like, I think the only thing that I will say, Ponyo, it was actually really funny because I rewatched Ponyo for this. And because I'd realized I'd only ever watched Ponyo high off my ass. Oh my God. When I watched Ponyo for the first time, it was me and my friend. I had, you know, I was hanging out, and we were hanging out, and we had the whole day. We were just chilling, and we smoked too much and just sat and watched Ponyo with like a massive order from Pizza Hut.
Huge.
And
the dream.
Rewatching it was just as magical as I remember. I realized, I was like, okay, I was worried. I was like, was it only so magical because I was high as hell? But no, it was a fantastic movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think, like, for me, this one was one where it was like, I don't know, I didn't know what to expect going
in.
Like, I wasn't expecting to be like an aerial retelling. Like, that was so interesting. That was like The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
And like, I'd heard, you know, everyone just like, again, this is like, I think, kind of like your experience with Howl. I just heard everyone like thirsting after the dad. Like, that was like my they were right.
He's a quintessential Tumblr sexy man.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that that's, you know, unavoidable.
Oh, yeah. Like, I saw him pop on screen. I'm like, yeah, doomed from the start.
Yeah,
doomed
over.
From the start.
Over.
Like, the moment, like, 14-year-olds got their claws into him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
you know, I'd draw him making out with, like, the Lorax or something.
Oh,
not the Lorax. Oh, my God, not the Lorax. The Onceler. What am I? Hey, well, the Lorax would be a crazy duo, but, yeah.
You can make it happen.
Yeah, putting him with, like adult Onceler is, you know.
That definitely exists.
That exists somewhere. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think, like, this one, I think, is, like, so interesting in kind of how, like, it, again, like, plays with age. Like,
yeah.
But in, like, a very different manner. Like, I thought it was going to be a lot darker at first, especially in, like, that final scene where there's, like, all the wheelchairs lined up and, like, the grandmas are missing. I was like, oh, my God, they killed them all. Like, they drowned. But then it's, like, they're just all, like, going to, like, have fun. Like, it really, this one's more, like, again, I think it all comes
they
back
drowned
to, like,
grandma. Oh, hell no.
Grandma, come back.
No. Ponyo, why'd you drown? Oh, hell no. Where'd grandma go?
They done drowned Nana.
Yeah, they done drowned Meemaw. No. Yeah, but you were saying, yeah, they were just all having fun. And it's, you know.
And I think it's like, it really hammers home, like, how kind of fleeting youth is. And, like, even, like, how, like, quickly, like, is it, like, what's the kid's name? Satsuki?
Satsuke?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm trying to. Yeah. Oh, I'm trying to remember what his name is.
I think
can hear it. Yeah, wait, hold on. Google this before I just start calling him like Sasuke or something. His name can't be Sasuke.
Is it not?
That's like a Naruto character.
Oh my God. Wait. Let's see. But anyways, the kid, like, his problems are like, well, they're not huge. Like, there is kind of a moment where he has to grow up and, like, grapple with the fact that, like, his mom might have drowned in this tsunami.
Yeah, like, exactly. It's almost like there's such a lens of
Sosuke.
I was gonna say his name's not Sasuke. There's no way. But yeah, Sosuke. And I think that, yeah, I totally agree with you. It's like that juxtaposition of, like, you know, I appreciate that it acknowledges that, like, it kind of has, the movie has this childlike wonder veneer over top of it. And in that moment, right, where he's forced to reckon with these realities, it does almost all come. I think it's a beautiful juxtaposition where you think that, like, it's going to be a moment where this kid is, like, reality comes, you know, knocking, and this kid has to grow up. But I really love that it kind of puts that on its head, and it's like, actually look at, you know, like you said, it's like, oh, you know, the scene where all the wheelchairs are empty, and then it's like, oh, actually, like, they're all the grandmas are out partying and having fun, and they're, you know, enjoying themselves.
Having a blast.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's almost like saying that even in the face of, you know, harsh reality, like, the childlike wonder can still, you know, you can choose to continue experiencing that childlike wonder at things. I think even, like, you know, looking at the storm near the beginning of the movie, like, at the beginning of the movie, like, the storm and how it's kind of like, she, like, the mom is so stressed about it because she understands, like, the danger of it. She's like, oh my gosh, like, it's, you know, and, you know, the kid is pretty unbothered, right?
Yeah.
Well, the kid is pretty unbothered.
So, yeah.
He's like, cool. You know,
big
and
storm.
Exactly. And it's like, it's almost like a commentary by the end of the movie where it's like, you know, you go from this, you know, oh, here's this big storm that, like, she's freaking out about and everyone's really stressed and everything's scary to, you know, here's this massive, like, you know, the big tsunami. Yeah, it's, stuff happens at the end of that movie. And it's almost framed in that way of, like, it's reframing it in the sense of, like, well, finding, you know, the wonder in things is, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's a really wonderful, it's such a nice movie.
It is. Like, this is one of, like, Ghibli's, like, nice movies.
I think,
like, you put it on, you're like, I'm here for, like, a good time, you know?
Yeah. And do you have any more thoughts on Ponyo, or I have a segue?
You have a segue? I'll let you segue. I have no more thoughts on
Ponyo. No thoughts on Ponyo? Just, honestly, really lovely movie. I love that movie. It's so sweet. Love Ponyo. But speaking of, you know, the thing with Ghibli movies about making things, like, sweet and, you know, having that, like, really feel good, you know, deep kind of reflection. Miyazaki is notoriously like a mean guy.
We were talking about this when we first like discussed.
I have it in my notes that I was like, I can't forget to mention that we were talking about how mean of a guy this man is.
Walking out of your like your son's movie is screening and you walk out. That is like Succession level.
Genuinely, like, you're like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Get better, kid.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something to be said about he's such a such an enigmatic figure.
Yeah.
That he makes these beautiful, soulful pieces of, like, frankly, art.
Yeah.
Like, not even just like as entertainment, like art.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, we didn't get the chance to talk about like Boy and the Heron, right? Like, fully just like going into retirement and be like, actually, I got more.
I'm pulling your leg.
I got more stuff to do.
Extremely personal film that's going to win the Academy Award.
Genuinely, yeah. Like, incredible, like, critically acclaimed, like, insane movie.
Yeah.
I didn't get the chance to finish it before we did this today, but like, I watched like half of it and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to have a pause because this is so intense.
It is. I actually, fun story about that movie. Mm-hmm. I saw it twice in theaters, saw it subbed and I saw it dubbed.
Yeah.
The first time I saw it, after I was walking out, I got pepper sprayed.
So wild.
Fun. I think I've told the story on air before, but so that really added to the experience. But I also think, like, even contrasting it, like, with Ponyo, like how, like, it kind of keeps the sense of wonderment. This one's almost about, like, the kid who has to, like, confront the reality and has to grow up.
Yeah.
But, like, has to, like, refine that sense of wonder. And, like, there's
totally,
like, this melancholy, like, to it that I think a lot of the other movies centering kids don't really have. Like, even
absolutely,
if you think, like, My Neighbor Totoro or, like, Spirited Away, like, there's still this, like, this, there are, like, moments of, like, heaviness, but it's very, like, still light and whimsical. But this
absolutely,
one is, like, it starts off and it's, like, his mom is dead. He is moving.
Yeah.
And, like, I think it being such, like pulling from Miyazaki's own life,
mm-hmm,
like, I think just makes it so much more, like, impactful in that.
Well, 100%. And I think it honestly is very, you know, I think it shines a big, like, a real spotlight on, you know, the guy, the creative vision behind a lot of this.
Yeah.
And I think it honestly, Boy and the Heron, I think it is almost like the final puzzle piece in terms of, like, how he approaches film and how he approaches storytelling and how he approaches direction, like, mm-hmm, art direction, everything. Like, it's I think it makes it all make sense about why his movies are the way they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, to me, this is, like, the antithesis of, like, Megalopolis or something. Like,
totally.
Both,
like,
very intensely personal films, but, like, one of them just feels so, like, ego-driven. This one just feels so,
totally,
like, presenting, like, heart on a platter to you. And it's kind of like, okay, if this is, like, Miyazaki's final film, because he's getting up there. Like,
he's old.
This guy is, like, pushing 80.
Like, okay, Unk, get, you know, Unk, maybe chill out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, if we're talking about age, right? If we're talking about aging gracefully, right? I'm like, you know, part of that, I think, is also knowing when to say, okay, I've made my I would say this is, like, the perfect time to bow out. This is, like, that's, like, magnum opus kind of movie, right?
Like, before this, it was, like, the last movie. It was, like, The Wind Rises, which is a good movie, but I wouldn't say it's, like, S tier.
No, it's, like, he went out with a bang with Boy and the Heron,
yeah,
right? And I think that that's, like, oh, my God, but how long it took to make, mm-hmm, too. Like, years and years and years and years of just animating alone.
Yeah.
Like, no, I think it's fantastic, but I do think it's very funny that this man who writes about, like, you know, who makes these really heartfelt, beautiful films, will, like, say, you know, will say the craziest out-of-pocket quotes.
Just, like, such a hater.
He's a hater. He is a hater at heart, and you know what? Maybe that's why I resonate with him so much. He's a hater at heart, and I, you know what? I'm not maybe on his level, but I think I respect it.
You aspire to it.
Absolutely.
You got time, you know?
Well, you know, and
he's 80. He's had time to let the hate, like,
he's let it fester,
yeah,
and he's let it linger, one might say. And I you know what? And I think that's the perfect thing I could say about Miyazaki is that, you know, I aspire to reach his level, not in terms of artistic, you know, direction, talent, like, you know, skill, you know, story writing, world building. I aspire to reach his level of hating.
Yeah, just absolute, like,
just kind of being a mean guy.
Yeah. And I think that's a dream.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really healthy thing that we can aspire towards.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to close this out. As we previously offered, dream Ghibli blunt rotation.
Oh, so
final
true.
Point.
Oh my God, his name's Calcifer, right?
Calcifer.
Oh my gosh, I forgot his name immediately.
In here.
Yeah. A Calcifer for sure. Oh geez. I definitely Calcifer. I think you know what? I'm going to say Calcifer, I'm trying to think of a character from Porco Rosso I'd want on there. Not Marco. I honestly would not want Marco on the blunt
rotate.
He's
killing the vibe.
No, actually, Loki, like, again, you know, we talk about it as much as he's a bad guy. Loki, I think it'd be funny. I think it'd be funny. But no, okay, I'd say Calcifer. Maybe one of the seaplane pirates. Seaplane pirate captains. Those two, and then I would say... out of the Ghibli movies, yeah. I'd say, now the dad's too neurotic from Ponyo. No. He wouldn't be a good
He's getting stressed.
Maybe I just have Calcifer, but like, oh, you know what? The Scarecrow's a chiller. I get the Scarecrow in there. I get Howl's Scarecrow in there. I get the Howl's Scarecrow in there because I think they could all rock with it. You know what? I'd even throw in the spirit from Spirited Away. No Face from Spirited Away. I throw No Face. You know
real
what? Dude got the munchies.
No, literally.
Dude would bring snacks.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Costco size bag.
I'm hoping, like, yeah, he could eat them all, but I'm thinking he'd bring snacks. Your dream blunt rotation quickly.
Calcifer, obviously off the bat.
Like, yeah, of course. Like Calcifer, but like four times.
Grandma Mare.
Oh,
yeah.
Good one.
Need her in
good there. One. Need, need.
I feel like Howl's Moving Castle, I gotta say... Oh, God. Well, I guess I already got Calcifer in there, but I do agree with you on the Scarecrow. Like,
Scarecrow
I feel
is a chiller.
He's like, he's there for a good time. You know?
Uh-huh. Scarecrow's a chiller.
I feel like I'm forgetting his name, but he's the Heron from
Boy the Heron. What was it? Like Birdman? The bird guy. Yeah.
Loki, like, he is a little malicious little guy, but, like, I need him there for the vibes.
Hell yeah.
And I'm forgetting Porco Rosso. I feel like Gina. Just because I actually really would be need to so... push, I really need to push the close relationship agenda.
You need to pull Gina, and that's beautiful. Hell yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah.
You know what? And I think that wraps us up on Ghibli, which is crazy.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming on again. And if you guys enjoy Matthew's voice, they're going to be back again next week.
Oh, you're not getting away from me.
Yeah. We'll be back same time, same place, 4 to 5. Real World, CITR. I've been Emma.
And I've been Matthew.
And we'll see you guys next week. All right. Bye-bye.